There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Gentlemen, we're live back at the Elder Dragon Dodo podcast. This is your host Igor, and as always with me is my co-host Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi, people.
So, we have been gone for a while since I still haven't edited and posted the previous episode. Because my computer died. So, I'm promising when you send me the episode, I'm going to edit both of them and give you a double whammy. Two episodes at once. Whoa. One pre-Corona hit in Croatia, and one after Corona hit Croatia, basically.
Not a lot after, but during.
Hit us previously. Now we're still living in the Corona present, I guess?
Yeah, this is the Corona timeline.
Honestly, I'm not minding it as much.
I mean, that's because it actually didn't hit us as hard as the others.
Surprisingly, Croatia got on top of things really fast.
Yeah, we actually have our people that work at the... How do you even say it in English? The emergency people.
Basically. First responders.
The civil protection, yes. Something.
Oh yeah, that.
And our epidemiologists, I guess. So people who are responsible for this did an outstanding job.
What's more surprising that our government actually listened to them.
Yep. And how, as much as I noticed, a lot of people listened to them as well.
Yep, because it's been ravaging the country for 2 weeks, right?
A bit more.
We only have 15 dead people. That's fascinating. On the other hand, we are super close to Italy. Mm. So I think as soon as it started happening, our government was like, okay, this might be serious.
Yeah. Also, our healthcare is better than people think it is.
Partly because a bunch of people who are in charge of the whole civic protection are a bunch of people who survived the war. So once crisis actually hits, we're like, okay, we know what to do.
And the minister is actually a brain surgeon. Mm-hmm. So he's used to working under pressure. And 2 months after he's elected, he has two catastrophes on his hand.
Yep, because we did have an earthquake a week ago in Zagreb.
I completely lost track of any sense of time.
Same, but actually, yeah, the earthquake hit Zagreb. Your district wasn't hit that hard, right?
I mean, it was hit as hard as anywhere else, but it didn't suffer as much because our buildings here are super solid.
Ours were built in the 60s, so, you know.
Yeah. The whole city center was hit really hard.
Because the city center itself was actually old building.
Yeah, it's 1800s. It's the historic part of the city.
Yep, my building was hit hard, but honestly, it was built well enough that it survived the blast. It's mostly cosmetic, mm-hmm. The damages. So that's good.
Yeah, we'll have cracks in paint, mm-hmm, and not cracks in walls.
We also have cracks in walls a bit, but nothing actually to, you know, lower the isolation or something. But let's put this behind us. I'm hoping that everybody's listening to us is safe and keeping proper social distancing. Because that's important.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we were talking to Kevin a couple of weeks ago, we were also as optimistic as we are now, which is funny.
Well, we gotta do our part.
Yeah, my job put me on the minimum wage, but at least I'm still employed, so the money is gonna keep on coming. That's good.
Yep. Anyhow,
yeah,
so
we have all of the spoilers to go through.
Well, not all of them. We do have roughly 100 of them. But we won't be covering them all because, well, they're mostly limited water.
Before we actually start even talking about the cards themselves, we have some commanders of the week, maybe?
Well, I haven't actually... I haven't touched my magic cards for, like...
Couple weeks?
Well, the moment we... some measures were put in place.
Basically, the last commander you had when we were talking with Kevin is your commander of the week.
That was actually my modern deck, and right now I can't really say that I have a commander of the week, so I'm just gonna say that I have decided to rebuild Karador.
Ha!
And by rebuild Karador, it was just like... remember when I... when my idea was to have Karador and the new
Chainer
as secret partner commanders in the deck?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't really work out.
A surprise!
Maybe because I don't refuse to put in enough tutors for them, because I deliberately made the deck to be a precon level, like a higher precon level power, so like not last year's or the years before, but, you know, those good precons.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere around that level, let's say. And it didn't work out. And basically, I was playing Karador with, like, 5 red cards and a lot worse mana base. So, I just, like, I just want to play Karador, man. So, you know... Sasuke is on the sidelines, and my bro Karador is coming back, and this is the best time to bring him back as ever.
I mean, might as well.
How about you?
We've played like a couple of games, like 2 to 3 times a week, Tess and I. She has actually built the Boar God as a commander.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, holy crap, if you don't kill the Boar God, the deck just tramples you over. Especially when it's 1-1.
Yeah, I mean, a 6-6 is nothing to scoff at.
But it's not that him that kills me, the Boar God. No, you know who kills me? Fucking Tyrant of Discord. Comes into play, regularly kills like 6 of my permanents and then kills the land, and I'm like, well, I'll just poop. Might as well.
Speaking of Discord, we should totally try Discord one day.
We could one of these days actually just test to see if it actually works properly or not.
Mm-hmm.
But anywho, yeah, Tyrant of Discord can go suck my dick. What an asshole.
So, yeah.
I guess that's my commander of the week, being salty because Tyrant of Discord kills like 6 of my permanents and then bounces back to the hand.
To do it all again.
Oh, it doesn't, because I mostly scoop, because my field dies. So, you know.
Of course.
I'm not giving it the satisfaction.
Nice.
But let's talk about Ikoria, aka Yu-Gi-Oh?
Oh, no, it's...
Hearthstone?
This set looks... It doesn't look like that kind of... I'm not gonna say inspiration, but the whole set seems like it looks like more of like of a words.
It looks like you had a fever dream and designed the set.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it looks like a passion project and not an actual set.
I wish somebody actually put more passion in the trailer for Ikoria.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because the trailer is just bland.
Yeah, I was like surprised that the trailer drops and nobody in our group is talking about it, and we were like totally getting wet over the past two trailers.
We were ready to be hyped, but it was just boring.
It was a couple of minutes of nothing happening.
And the thing that I minded but you didn't was that fakey punk sound in the background.
It's just reeked of unfulfilled potential.
Honestly, my argument is if they played a bit more orchestra-driven music, it would feel a bit better.
Yeah, but they might establish that Vivian isn't a good character in the story.
She doesn't have to be a good character. She just needs to be an epic one.
Yeah.
Because don't forget, by the Greek definition of hero, a hero isn't, you know, a good guy. He's just a person that gets the epic shit done.
Mm-hmm.
Hercules is not a good guy, but he's still a hero.
Oh yeah, just to mention this quickly, the reason why you sound different is that you're actually on another microphone, right?
The microphone is the same, but Skype is different because I'm on the girlfriend's laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Because, fun thing, we go into self-isolation, and then I'm like, okay, my computer is dying, I'll just get new parts. I got a new rig, it's all fine, it's all dandy, then the earthquake happens, hooray. And then it turns out all the diagnostics I did, turns out it wasn't the graphics card that died. It was the monitors. I need to get a new monitor as well.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't life wonderful?
But still, it sounds like... It kind of sounds like you're using the built-in microphone from the laptop.
I'm not sure. I'm going to play with a couple of the options now. How does it sound now?
Still the same. But okay, let's go on. We're not gonna do live technical difficulties this time.
This time.
Anyhow, yeah, the trailer was kind of bland, but then they dropped some serious stuff on us. So let's go over the art of Ikoria for starters.
Art looks bitching.
So what they did is, there will be showcase cards that either have mutate or something else, chosen for some, but with some thought behind them, I guess. And they're gonna get some of them are gonna get two treatments, some of them are gonna get just one. So there's the alternate art, comic book style of art. And then there's the, legendary, alternate art that transforms the card, like, let's say, a Luminous Broodmoth, into Mothra Supersonic Queen. It still has the same name, which is printed below the new name, and it has art from one of the kaijus from the Godzilla series because of their partnership with Toho. So they actually have like a bunch of monsters from the Godzilla universe, and they put them on magic cards. And what else to say about this? So they're basically like, let's say, legendary skins in Overwatch that just completely change the way your character looks, or in arcanas in Dota, or legendary skins in LoL. So they completely reskin the card, but the card is still the same. So let's say you can't have four Luminous Broodmoths and four Mothras, because Mothra is still Luminous Broodmoth. But I have noticed that people are very split about these cards. I, for one, welcome these kaijus into Magic because I just love giant monsters. Who would have thought? And, you know, Pacific Rim was freaking awesome. So, yeah. These kinds of artwork are... I like them. But there are people that dislike them, but that's the good part of this. You don't actually have to get them. You have the regular art, and you have the comic book art, which is, like, amazing.
I guess it depends on which card are we looking, because some arts have really cool cool arts, some look a bit more eh. But then again, I'm not actually that familiar with the Godzilla universe, so...
Well, neither am I, but it's still cool to see creatures beyond, outside of Magic, making their appearance here.
I like the way they handled it, actually, that it's not, you know, you don't have Godzilla in the main set. It's just, you know, a thing you can get on the side, it's a partnership, but it's not interfering with anything.
Yeah, their primary goal is always making things in Magic and working the gameplay to be Magic related, and then they just put in a fresh coat of paint over that.
So let's talk about actual cards.
Okay, so first off, we can start with the mechanics of the set.
So what are the mechanics of the set, Mr. Judge Person, you?
So we have cycling as a returning mechanic. We have keyword counters, which are counters that have keywords on them, and, you know, creatures that get those counters have those keywords. So like a first strike keyword counter is a counter you can place on a creature, and it has first strike. So it's as simple as that. They're just like +1/+1 counters, only, you know, if you put in on 10 first strike counters on the creature, nothing changes.
Wait, it's not gonna give it the firstest of strikes?
Definitely not, and it's not gonna give them the deathest of touches.
Well, yeah, what's next?
We have... is there something simpler? Okay, no.
Nope.
So, we got mutate is a new keyword mechanic. And I'll just go over it with the example they provided. So, we have Cloud Piercer, which is 4 and a red for a 5/4 creature dinosaur with mutate for 3 and a red. So, mutate says, if you cast this spell for its mutate cost, put it over or under target non-human creature you own. They mutate into the creature on top, plus all abilities from under it. Cloud Piercer has reach, and whenever this creature mutates, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. So, let's say that we're in a situation where we have a 2/2 bear with first strike. It's on the field, and you have Cloud Piercer in your hand. You can pay 4 mana, and you can put Cloud Piercer over the 2/2 bear with first strike, and then it will become Cloud Piercer, a 5/4 with first strike reach, and whenever this creature mutates, you may discard a card, you draw a card. Or you can put it under the bear, so now it's a 2/2 bear with first strike reach, and whenever this creature mutates, blah 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 blah. So the mutate, you don't inherit the power and toughness, you only inherit all the abilities of the card. And the part where it says whenever this creature mutates, so you can mutate onto a creature that doesn't have mutate, and your mutate will trigger. If you mutate onto above it, under it, whatever you do, it will trigger, always, for each mutate you mutate onto it. So it's kind of like... So it's kind of like Bestow, only worse.
But because it's worse and less safe, they went a bit more crazy with abilities?
We'll get to that later when we look at the actual cards. And let's go and see. The other mechanic is Companion.
Oh, this was a controversial one.
Oh yeah. So Companion is, if you imagine Hearthstone and you look at Baku the Moon Eater and Glenn Greymane. So they had start of game. Glenn Greymane had at the start of the game, if your deck has only even costed cards, your hero power costs one. So it's an effect that's that affected your entire your gameplay element if you followed certain deck building restrictions. Companion is similar to this. So let's look at Keruga the Macro Sage. It's a three and two hybrid Simic mana. Hooray! Hybrid mana is back. It's a 5 mana, 5/4 legendary creature, a dinosaur hippo. With Companion, your starting deck contains only cards with converted mana cost 3 or greater and land cards. So, what you do now is, if your deck obeys the deck building restrictions of Keruga, you put Keruga in your sideboard, and it's revealed from your sideboard, and you can play Keruga from your sideboard once. Specifically, it says, if this card is your chosen companion, you may cast it once from outside the game. And within the rules of Magic, outside the game is your sideboard. So you can put like three Kerugas in your main deck, and the fourth Keruga put it into your sideboard, and it's basically in your hand. It's like a semi-commander, only it's not in exile, it's not in the command zone, it's literally in your sideboard, and you present it. If of course, your deck follows the deck building restrictions, so you get a guaranteed card that you can play. It's like having the 61st card in your deck, only it doesn't interfere with your draws. So it's a way to put in a bit of Commander into Standard, and these cards will be Commander legal.
Most of them.
Yeah. So the rule, the general rule of Companion, you can have only one Companion.
Luckily.
And in Commander it functions the same as anything else. It follows your color restrictions, but it does not count towards the 100 card limit. Since in Standard it doesn't go towards the 60 card limit. I mean, 60 plus card limit. You still have 60 cards in your deck. You can't have 59 plus a companion. You have to have 60 in your starting deck. And that's about it. What about companions?
We'll talk about a bit of them specifics later, but any other mechanics?
No, those are the mechanics of the main set, which we'll be going through the main set, and then later we'll do the commander stuff in another episode.
Yeah, because tomorrow they're going to spoil the whole list, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Plus, there is so much to go through. Let's actually start with that.
Yeah, let's go.
With Snapdex, Apex of the Hunt, 1 and Amardu. It's a legendary creature, Dinosaur Cat Nightmare, you know, the usual creature type. By the way, Simic has infiltrated and won this plane over. Just going through creature types.
Mm-hmm.
So, it has Mutate, 2 Black-Red Hybrid, White-White. It has Double Strike. Whenever this creature mutates, it deals 4 damage to target creature or planeswalker and opponent controls, and you gain 4 life.
So let's look at it without the mutate. So without the mutate, it's a 4 mana, triple color, 3/5 double strike.
That does nothing without the mutate.
Yeah, so it's 4 mana, 3/5 double strike, which is really bad. Let's just say it's really bad.
When it mutates, it becomes a bit better Glory Bringer for one turn.
I mean, if it mutates, it's like amazing. So it's a well, is it really?
Depending on the creature you're mutating upon.
Yeah. So if you're let's say for the purpose of all the mutate cards, let's just say that you have a 2/2 bear on the field. So for 5 mana, you're getting a 3/5. So it's a 5 mana, 3/5 double strike that deals 4 damage and gains you 4 life.
Yep.
That's pretty good. I would say that that's pretty good for in standard. That, I mean, it doesn't have green or blue in it, so you know, it could have been a bit better. You know, to contest green and blue.
Oh well.
But oh well.
Uno and things like that were a bit pushed, so you know.
Oh yeah, an interesting thing about mutate with these legendary creatures is that, so it's a Mardu in its casting cost, but it's 2, a hybrid black red and double white, so you can play it in a, so you can actually play it easily in a 2 color deck.
Yep.
Like, let's say you have aggro vampires. Yeah, let's go with Boros vampires or something like that. And you use this as a high, as the high end of your curve, like a 5 mana deal 4 damage to a creature, which pretty much kills a creature. You gain 4 life and you have a 3/5 double strike that's ready to attack because it's not a new creature.
Yep.
It mutated onto an existing creature.
You put this on Adanto Vanguard.
Yep. So, seeing it as a 5 mana 3/5 double strike that can attack the turn you play it, it's kind of okay, but still, if somebody kills your 2/2 bear in response, you're very sad. So, it gets countered by removal spells and not just counter spells. It can be countered as well, because it's still casting the creature. It's not an ability or something like that. So, regarding Commander, it suffers from the Commander attacks as well.
Hooray!
But you wouldn't play Snap decks as your Commander anyway.
Next time I've done so many mistakes in my life, might as well do another one.
And its stat line is really bad. I mean, you can't even play it in Alesha.
That is true. I can't even tutor for it with any of the recruiters.
And you can't reanimate it.
Yeah. Maybe some next immediate card is going to improve. What's the next command mixture?
So we have Brokos, Apex of Forever, which is, and it's 2 and a Sultai, so 5 mana for a 6/6 legendary creature. Nightmare Beast Elemental. This actually makes more sense, I guess, this creature type. With Mutate 2, double green and a hybrid blue-black. It has Trample. And you may cast Brokos Apex of Forever from your graveyard using its Mutate ability.
This is a bit better, maybe? I'm not sure.
This one, looking at Commander, this has like different implications. I see this as a Voltron commander because it gives the evolved creature trample. It by itself has trample, and you never actually pay the commander tax unless some evil people exile your graveyard. But why would they exile Brokos?
I was gonna say, I think Wizards are giving us a hint, we should play Oko in this deck so we have a steady supply of creatures to mutate upon.
Yeah, he does fit with this.
Oko, Broko, you know.
Yeah, Oko is... Well, you see. Oh, so that's what they were planning.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, it's not... Oko isn't the problem. Oko actually enables you to mutate.
I mean, Oko and Broko are Brokos, so you know. This is a bad pun. I'm ashamed.
He does have Oko in his name, only with two K's, so it's Oko.
It's basically they're giving us the winky face, you know. No, that's not what we're aiming at. Wink.
We have an actual Broko. Yeah.
But besides that, he's a bit not exciting.
A recursive commander that doesn't need that dodges commander attacks like super easily. But this is just like
Niksha, they really went out of the way. Look, a Sulte commander that can recur stuff. Ooh, exciting.
He can't even recur stuff, he can recur only himself.
He is tough.
Well, it would be really good if he said that you can play cards from your graveyard for their mutate, or if he gave mutate to your creatures in your graveyard, but whatever.
Okay. Funny you mentioned the word Gabe, which is an Abzan commander, and the following commander we have is also Abzan. Niksha, you should actually read this one. This is your type of commander.
So, Nethroi, up Apex of Death, 2 and Abzan. So it's a 5 mana, 5/5 Cat Nightmare Beast. With Mutate 4, Hybrid Green White and Double Black. Death Touch and Lifelink. Whenever this creature mutates, return any number of targeted creature cards with total power 10 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
See, this is one really steep mutate cost, but holy crap.
Yeah, this... And you know what? This slots in really nicely into Karador. Because guess what? When somebody destroys your bear in response to your mutate, you just mutate from your graveyard.
Yep.
And you can keep doing that.
And it's a 5/5 life on Death Touch, so that by itself is, you know...
I mean, you can even mutate this onto onto your commander. Mm-hmm. Onto Karador, yeah.
That will make him really beefy.
Yeah.
10-10, right? That would be the stat line.
No. His stat line is still 5/5.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I went full kaiju with this. But yeah, 5/5 Death Touch Lifelink is nothing to scoff at.
Yeah. You can also put it under a really big trampler. So, you got that. I mean, if you combine all of the... Well, I'll get to it once we finish all of the cycles. So, but it's a mass... It's a recursive mass reanimation effect. And I'm liking that.
This one seems to be actually the best for now. The most exciting.
Yeah. I mean, the limitation with total power 10 or less, that's like, whatever. Oh no.
Especially put into context with Karadar and commanders like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sheesh. Next one we have Badrock, Apex of Thunder. Blue, red, white. A legendary creature, elemental dinosaur cat. 3/3. Flying first strike. Mutate of one and a white-blue hybrid, red-red. Whenever this creature mutates, you may cast target non-creature card with commander mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. Giving things flashback.
It's unfortunate that it's like a one-time thing.
No. You play Snapcaster Mage, flashback something. Then you put this on a Snapcaster Mage.
You can't because Snapcaster is a human.
We'll play something to take all these creature types away. you giant grow to your own Snapcaster Mage. Then you hit it with... what was that removal spell from Lorwyn that has the changeling?
There's a lot of changeling removal spells from Lorwyn. There's that black one.
Yes, the -3/-3 and it loses all creature types. Name is the version.
Yeah.
You hit it with that and then you mutate onto him.
Oh, okay.
So I am a genius. I'm the greatest human ever lived. But yeah, overall, it's okay. You can put this on the Gear Hulk, the blue one.
You can, yes. But, you know, adding red to... Actually, Blue-Red is, like, completely legit.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, come to think of it...
Sevienne did come out last year, and she's in Jessica Colors.
I mean, like, thinking about this right now, not in Commander, but in other formats, and, like, a 3-mana 3-3 flying first strike isn't really that bad of a stat line.
If it had haste, it would be playable in humans.
Unfortunately, this is literally unplayable in humans. I mean, it's playable.
You know what I was referring
yeah,
to.
Yeah, 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 I know. It's not a huge mantis. But you know, actually, like a end of turn Gear Hulk, and on your turn, mutate Vardrock on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a 5/6 flying first striker that flashbacks another card. This doesn't seem that far fetched. I mean, it's blue red or white red.
But it's not, you know, flashbacks. You cast a non-creature card. Non-creature card.
Yeah, non-creature card.
So that can be so many things. It can be artifacts. It can be, you know, things you would usually flashback.
You could even flashback, you know, the 3-drop the fairy.
Oh, fuck me in the...
Okay, so...
You can definitely do that.
Okay, this guy suddenly shows a lot of interesting potential in anything but Commander.
And if you have a really good board position, you can always -2 Teferi on Vardrock.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't counter it now.
Yeah.
I'm liking this guy much more than when we started the conversation.
The only thing I'm really sad about is that they're all triple colored, so you can't actually play them in Nivtolite. Man.
Aw, man.
Anyways, so, yeah, I mean, reanimating Teferi is really good. Oh, wow.
Come to think of it, yes.
Oh, man. Wait. You can even play the mutate through... Fires of Invention.
Oh god.
I mean, Vardrock doesn't reanimate Fires of Invention, but it doesn't actually reanimate anything from Fires of Invention.
But you can play it with Fires of Invention?
You can definitely play it with Fires of Invention, yeah.
Ready for the next one?
Yeah.
So it's Illuna, Apex of Vicious, 2 and Teemer for 6/6. Legendary creature, beast, elemental, dinosaur. Flying trample. Mutate of 3 green, red, blue, blue. Whenever this creature mutates, exile cards from the top of the library until you exile a non-land permanent card. Put that card onto the battlefield or into your hand. This is a really strong mutate.
It is... Unfortunately, it's a non-land permanent card.
Why is it unfortunately?
Because I had my fair share of, you know, going with that Genesis Storm, I think it's called.
The one with the more times you cast your commander. Yeah,
it's Genesis Storm.
Yep.
While playing Genesis Storm in Golos, that it just went and got me, like, 2 signets.
Ooh.
And that's like really feels really bad, man. And this one, I mean, it's a one-time thing. So if you don't manipulate the top of your library, it's like, I don't know. It's just that it's very random, and if you don't build your deck around it, it's most of the time it's gonna be like really like not worth it.
I mean, Nixha, let me paint you a picture. We play this guy, right? We play Food Chain. We Food Chain combo and get everything out.
Okay. Like when I'm talking about Commander, I don't care about Food Chain. Neither do I care about Flash. I'm just saying that for such a high mutate cost, it doesn't have that big of a payoff. I mean, yeah, I would much rather be reanimating Teferis than getting a random creature. Getting a random anything.
Casual-wise, this has the highest ceiling, but it also has the lowest floor.
Yeah.
With the Mardu one, it's not high ceiling, but it's always going to deliver exactly what you want. It's going to bonk something for 4, you'll gain 4 life. The previous one we talked about, it's always going to reanimate something nice. The Carver one, mostly it's going to be stupid. But you just flip a coin, see what happens.
I mean, this could, like, could work in Golos, because you have Golos on, you know, Golos ramps you into Illuna. I'm just saying.
I mean.
So you can mutate Golos, you can still keep the Golos. But you don't keep the Golos. You just mutate onto Golos, Illuna.
Yes.
You get a 6/6 flying trample that gives you another card, and you can always pay 5 mana to play more cards. But this is not something I'll be putting into Corridor unless I get a foil version of it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems safer to spin the wheel with Golos than, you know, with her.
This is like you can play this if you want to play Maelstrom Wanderer, but everybody keeps punching you in the face because you're playing Maelstrom Wanderer, so you just play Illuna, which is like Maelstrom Wanderer, only weaker, and, you know, fairer.
Yeah, Illuna is Maelstrom Wanderer's dumb cousin, basically.
On the other hand, it's a 5 mana 6/6 flying trample. Very good stats for its cost.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like Ugin in the art.
And, of course, the alternate art for Illuna. It's Ghidorah, King of the Cosmos.
Ha!
Huh. I mean, it's Ghidorah, King of the Cosmos. Come on. Like, if that's not a reason for it to be your commander, then I don't know what is. I'm just gonna go quickly over the creatures that are the legendary creatures with mutate. What are their Godzilla counterparts? So, Brokkos is Bio Quartz Space Godzilla. Illuna is Ghidorah, King of the Cosmos. Nethroi Apex of Death is Biollante, Plant Beast Form. Vadrok Apex of Thunder is Rodan, Titan of Winged Fury. And Snapdax is King Caesar, Awoken Titan.
I am so not following the Godzilla version.
I know, but if you watched the last Godzilla, then you would know who Ghidorah is.
I have some idea who Ghidorah is, just generally, because I'm not super out of the Godzilla universe. I did watch a bunch of those Japanese 60s movies. By the way, those are the best Godzilla movies.
Yeah, well, probably because the last two Godzillas, the American Godzillas, weren't really that good. I mean, those movies had amazing Godzilla sequences. But the problem was that it had the rest of the movie, which wasn't a Godzilla sequence, ergo it was pretty bad.
The problem with Americans and making Godzilla movies is they don't do it batshit insane like the Japanese did. They were like, okay, this is gonna be dumb as fuck, but it's Godzilla, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Would any normal American studio executive be like, why is this monster fighting a giant moth? They would ask the question. Japanese were like, hell yeah, it's fighting a giant moth, why not?
Hell yeah, this giant moth is in love with Godzilla, why the fuck not?
I mean, so yeah, I'm saying maybe they should just embrace the dumb bullshit.
I mean, that's probably the reason Pacific Rim didn't do so well in America, but did amazingly well everywhere else.
Because it's a bunch of dumb bullshit.
But it's awesome dumb bullshit.
It's glorious dumb bullshit. For movies like that, you don't actually want a really good plot, because honestly, you're not watching it for the big plot, you're watching it for big dumb kaijus fighting Jaegers.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I love these Godzilla arts. I mean, most of them. That's why I love them, because, you know, fucking giant monsters.
I'm okay with giant stupid monsters doing stupid giant monster things.
But, okay, enough of that. Let's get back to the spoilers. And
we have mythoses, right?
Mythosai? And we have one that's actually, like, very close to a dear heart card of yours.
Oof, I wish it was. But it's really close and I might actually play it. So, Mythos of Snapdax for 2 and a white. Already a familiar mana cost. Sorcery. Each player chooses an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker from among the non-permanents they control. Then sacrifices the rest. Already this is really good.
Yeah, your opponent chooses, so...
Yeah. Let's fix that, Nixon. If a black red was spent to cast a spell, you choose the permanence for each player instead.
Oh, now we're talking.
So you get to keep the stupid token. You get to keep, I don't know, stupid... whatever is making everything more expensive. And yada. If you play this for the Mardu cost, it gets really good.
Matt, you're playing it in the Mardu deck, so why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I was part of me was like, it doesn't kill the lands, but quite often you don't even need to.
Yeah, it's like a board wipe that you dictate.
If I play this against, let's say, the Borgad or something like that, and they have any other stupid creature besides Borgad, it's like, okay, I'm okay with this.
Yep. You're always going to be in a better board position after it. And it's just a really solid mass removal. The only problem is that when Golos casts it, it doesn't trigger the the secondary part.
Maybe you shouldn't be playing it in Golos, just saying.
Probably won't.
So, but the art is wonderful.
Yeah, Seb McKinnon, of course.
He did it again.
Mm-hmm. So next up we have Mythos of Nethroi. It's a 2 and a black for an instant. Destroy target non-land permanent if it's a creature or if green and white was spent to cast this spell. So it's a 3 mana instant. Destroy target non-land permanent.
That's really good.
I mean, it's 3 colored mana, but really, I don't think that's so much of an issue.
Would you play this in Karazor?
No. I'm sorry, is it a permanent?
Would you play it in any normal Abzan deck if you weren't playing that type of Karazor?
Definitely.
I think that's a better prefacing of the question.
It's a shame it says non-land permanent, but I guess balancing.
I mean, yeah, they really don't like Vindicate as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have the next... I mean, there's nothing much to say about this card, because it's just... it kills the thing you want.
Yeah, the other two mythoses are...
So, Mythos of Bardock is 2 and a red. By the way, it sucks because that it's not 3, but okay. Mythos of Bardock does 5 damage divided as it chooses among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers. If blue-white was spent to cast a spell, until your next turn those permanents can't attack or block and their activated abilities can't be activated. I mean,
it's a cute way to, like, make someone, you know, 5 creatures can't block, let's say. It's a cute finisher. It can be a finisher, and But the problem is you can't recast it with Vardrok, so come on. Please.
And what's the next one?
The next one is Mythos of Brokos. It's a 2 green-green sorcery. If blue-black was used to cast this spell, search your library for a card and put it into your graveyard, then shuffle your library. Return up to 2 permanent cards from your graveyard to your hand.
If you put Eternal Witness into your graveyard and then bring it back with this one, you can have some really fun plays.
Yeah.
Loop, 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 loop.
Looping all the time.
You know what's interesting? If you look at the art of the previous 3 myths, you'll see the creatures being huge assholes towards the civilization, but Brokos is apparently being a bro, like the name says.
Hmm, interesting point.
So I'm guessing that that's how civilization actually survived on Ikoria.
Yeah, he brought them gifts. I mean, probably Iluna might also be one of those. We still don't have the Mythos of Iluna.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be another, like, gentle monster.
Of course, the art looks like some she-demon from hell, but you know. What do I know? What's the next interesting card, Miksha?
Luminous Broodmoth, the one I was talking before.
That one is sexy.
Mm-hmm.
What does it do?
2 double white for a creature insect, 3/4 with flying. Whenever a creature you control without flying dies, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a flying counter on it.
This one is really strong.
Yeah, it's good that it brings them back with a flying counter, because without that it would be completely broken.
People have found ways to make this completely broken.
I had no doubt.
Solemnity is the main culprit, surprisingly.
Yeah. Okay, so with Solemnity it just goes infinite.
Yep.
Nice.
Solemnity, and then you have something like, I don't know, Goblin Bombardment.
Yeah, there you go. Another way to finish the game in Boros.
Honestly, I might play this in Alesha, because this is actually bringing shit down. And then when it brings shit down, it's flying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also just a good recursion card.
Hence my point. Without... I don't own Solemnity, because of the spike, I will not actually own the Solemnity. But even without playing it in a combo way, I will still play this for value.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Next card is much more funnier. And I was just mentioning that because it's a good card. But by gods, we need to talk about Shark Typhoon. For 5 and a blue, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, create an XX blue shark creature token with flying, where X is that spell's converted mana cost. Cycle of X and 1 and a blue, and when you cycle it, create an XX blue shark creature token with flying. This is basically the Decree of Justice of this set, but with flying sharks.
Yeah. So, also, this is because they can't just make a Sharknado, but they knew they had that this was the moment. This was their time to make a Sharknado reference, and they made Shark Typhoon.
They could have easily made it in Ravnica and nobody would blink an eye, honestly.
Yep.
Because, oh yeah, of course the Azoth have the Sharknado. Or the Cynic.
It's just funny that the Mad Lads actually did the Sharknado.
Want to talk about some actual cards, not Shark Typhoon?
Sure.
Because this is a cute card, but honestly it's just a meme.
Yeah.
What's next?
Let's go over the 2 planeswalkers. You can do the red one.
Luca, Coppercoat Outcast, 3 and a red. Legendary planeswalker Luca. And by God, he has a mountain of text.
Yep.
So, for +1, exile the top 3 cards of your library. creature cards exiled this way gain. You may cast this from exile as long as you control a Luka Planeswalker. -2. Exile target creature you control, then reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card with a higher converted mana cost. Put that card onto the battlefield, then rest on your bottom of your library in a random order. And -7, each creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each opponent. So we put Emrakul in the deck, -2 anything?
Emrakul is kind of banned.
Ignore that fact for a second. The secret ingredient of this deck is crime. We will cheat, but it's going to be worth it.
Mm-hmm. So it's a polymorph, but it always upgrades.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
Mm-hmm. And can it be used twice because of his 5 starting loyalty?
Mm-hmm. +1 is a bit hit or miss.
Yeah. I mean, in a creature-focused deck, it's kind of like a almost draw 3, but you need to have Luka on the board to actually, you know, be able to cast them.
He needs to stick around.
So I'm seeing that you fire off his -2 just to get something to protect you with, and then you go +1.
Or your primary plan is to just, you know, fire the -2 and then everything else be damned.
Yeah. Sure.
I'll just get a huge dragon or some shit like that and blam. I should maybe get this one and put it in test as a boar god. Because honestly...
I'm thinking whether it would fit into... It might fit into Golos because everything in Golos is... Bigger and better than the thing before it. Yeah, it could work. It could. And it has a -7 that's a finisher.
Mm-hmm. Most likely you'll never get there, but if you get there, by God.
Yeah.
So, what does Vivian say, Nixia?
So we have Vivian, Monster's Advocate. It's a 3 double green for a 3 loyalty Planeswalker. You may look at the top card of your library anytime. You may cast creature spells from the top of your library. So she has that static ability. +1, create a 3/3 green beast creature token. Put your choice of a vigilance counter, a reach counter, or a trample counter on it. -2, when you cast your next creature spell this turn, search your library for a creature card with lesser converted mana cost, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
She's interesting.
Yes. her static ability is really good. It's just missing the part where you can play your cards, play your creatures instant speed, but that's what you have Spark Vivian for.
Mm-hmm.
So the Spark Vivian works really well with this Vivian. But her starting loyalty at 3 makes her -2, like, really, really risky.
In Vivian's defense, you're not supposed to -2 the turn you play her.
Yeah, you practically, you're not even expected to be even able to -2 the turn
you
play
basically
her.
+1, give the 3/3 a reach, and then turn after -2 and cast somebody.
Yeah, +1 protects her pretty efficiently. Yeah. But still, that's not a high starting loyalty.
Luckily, you're the only mad lad who plays Lightning Bolt in Commander, so...
I mean, she doesn't die to Lightning Bolt.
But gets super weakened by it.
I mean, you still go +1, but you still have to do a bunch of +1s to actually start using the -2. It's probably because if she were at a higher loyalty, then you could just play her +1 once, and then for the rest of the game you just -2, because you're pretty much gonna win the game after like the second -2, because the -2 is a really strong effect.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can play a combo piece, and you know, playing your combo piece brings out the other combo piece and you win the game.
Basically.
So, like, you play in... You have Melira in your deck, and you have... I don't know.
I was gonna go with you play a Kiki Jiki.
Oh, yeah, sure. Kiki Jiki, Kiki Jiki fetches any of his... any of the win conditions.
Besides the conscripts.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, but you can't play conscripts to get a Kiki Jiki. Oh, well.
So you play either the scout from Terras or any of the other Iberians.
But you do get the Blinking Angel with conscript, so yeah, mm-hmm. You win the game on the spot.
Hooray!
So yeah, Vivian's minus 2 is actually really powerful if she's let to live.
Oh well.
No, for like standard sets and other formats, I don't think she's really that good. I mean, she's in green, so yeah. Okay, while I'm talking, she's pretty good because she's in green.
There you go.
Oh man.
What's next to talk about?
Well, let's go with King Kong.
Huh. Well, what does King Kong say?
Not actual King Kong. We got,
it's basically King Kong.
Kogla, the Titan Ape, which is 3, triple green, for a legendary creature ape, 7/6. When Kogla enters the battlefield, it fights up to one target creature you don't control. Whenever Kogla attacks, destroy target artifact or enchantment defending player controls. For 1 and a green, return target human you control to its owner's hand, Kogla gains indestructible until the end of turn. So, yeah, this is their version of King Kong.
It's King Kong.
But interestingly enough, Kogla's alternate version is actually a Godzilla Primeval Champion. His biggest... I'm lying. He doesn't actually have a alternate art. Never mind. I was mistaken.
I think that's because they couldn't get rights for actual King Kong, because that's a separate company than Toho.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Kogla the Titan Ape does fight a bunch of Godzillas in the set, and sometimes wins.
By the way, look at the art. It's basically hanging on a building, and there is flying things around.
Yep. I mean, this is such a good reference to King Kong, while keeping it completely in the mechanics of Magic.
And keeping it super copyright infringement free.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ape.
It's not a monkey. yeah, that's definitely a big ape.
But what about the card itself? I mean, it's a 6-mana 7/6 that fights a creature you don't control, so it's going to destroy anything it hits.
That's a removal spell.
When it attacks, you destroy an artifact or enchantment. So... just attacks, it doesn't even have to connect.
That's also a removal spell.
And for 2 mana, you just return a human, and it gets indestructible. So for 8 mana, it's an indestructible 7/6 that are removal.
Basically Death Touch.
Almost, kinda.
I mean, it's a bit slow, though.
It is a bit slow, but, you know, if you're cheating it out, it's really strong because, you know, it's a big removal spell.
That's the big boy.
I like it. It's simple and effective. It's definitely not commander material, but it's in some decks it's part of the 99.
Yeah, in any big boy decks. Want to talk about actual commander-worthy cards?
Go ahead.
Danrit Magistrate is everything I wanted in a card. 1 and a white, it's a human wizard, it's a 1/3, and your opponents can't cast spells from anywhere other than their hands.
Mm-mm-mm. Hello, white. Finally getting good cards.
Ironic part is that I got a good human card that taxes people in a big beef boy set.
Unfortunately, it's a 1-3 and not a 1-2.
Recruiter of the Guard will get
or
this.
Or a 2-2.
I mean, Imperial Recruiter gets this. And Alesha gets this back.
It's not a legendary, so I can't get it with CSA.
But what does this stop, Alesha?
Well, primarily, it stops the commanders.
Your opponents can't cast commanders when this is out. Yeah. Also, they can't flashback cards from the graveyard. They can't. Fun thing, you can in fact play Uba Mask or Possibility Stone, then your opponents can't play the game anymore. And listeners of this show might remember that I kind of like playing with those cards.
And it just so happens to be that it fits in a deck that has, you know, Possibility Storm and Uba Mask.
I don't have Uba Mask or Possibility Storm in my deck in Alesha right now, but I'm gonna put it.
At some point, it's going to be too much. You have to stop at some point.
Only reason why I wasn't playing something like Possibility Storm in deck is because only way I could, you know, break the game is rule all effects. But if I have this and a Possibility Storm out, I can actually keep on playing the game. My opponents can't.
Let's just stop for a while and appreciate the fact that we went through three white cards that are actually good.
That's weird.
I'm a bit scared. But anyhow, let us move on with the spoilers.
What's the next good card?
Oh well, time to start digging.
Bastion of Remembrance is actually good.
Mm-hmm.
Two and a black enchantment, when it enters the battlefield, make a 1/1 white human soldier token. And it has whatever creature you control dies, each opponent loses one life, you gain one life. If you're playing an Aristocrats deck, this is third or fourth copy of that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you want all of those effects that you can.
Mm-hmm.
And now we start digging.
Well, for Voltron commanders, especially those that include white, there's a Colossification. For 5 and double green, enchantment aura, enchant creature. When Colossification enters the battlefield, tap enchanted creature. Which is like, it's super bad, because then your creature can't attack. So, what's the payoff? Well, enchanted creature gets +20/+20. Let's just put it like this. If your commander is somehow Hope of Ghirapur, and somehow you get in possession of Colossification, your Hope of Ghirapur deals exactly commander damage.
But we all know that Voltron decks like playing artifacts, right? And equipment specifically. Tell me, Niksha, is Umbral Mantle an equipment?
Umbral Mantle?
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
It's an it's equipment.
I completely forgot what Umbral Mantle even is. Is it the one that untaps it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
And gives it +2/+2 when you untap it. Because you needed that specific boost.
I mean, there's also, you know, Sigardar's Aid, so you can attack with a creature, they don't block, and then suddenly it has +20/+20, and it's like...
For best results, put it on Rafik of the Many.
Yeah.
You know, to kill him twice over.
So, it's definitely an interesting Voltron card, if you can get around its, like, horrible drawback.
Yep.
Or, you know, you enchant a creature and then just sacrifice it to greater good.
Yeah.
Oh, when we're at greater good, I'm just gonna go with Ominous Seas, which is a 1 and a blue enchantment. whenever you draw a card, put an Omen counter on Ominous Seas. Remove 8 Omen counters, create an 8/8 blue Kraken creature token. Has cycling too.
That's basically you're building your own Merit Lodge.
Yeah, but it also goes infinite with
Greater Good.
Greater Good. So you draw 8, you put 8 counters, you remove 8 counters, you get an 8/8. You draw 8, you put it. So you draw an entire deck. It's more of a build your own Gristlebrand.
Basically. Without that stupid being banned.
Unfortunately, this is blue, so I can't put it in Corridor.
Womp womp. What's next that's actually good in monocolored? Call of the Dead Dweller is a good card.
Which one?
Call of the Dead Dweller. 2 and a black sorcery. Return up to 2 target creature cards at total CMC 3 or less from a graveyard to the battlefield. Put a Death Touch counter on either of them. And then put a Menace counter on either of them.
So, yeah, it's a good way to get back your dorks, your hate bears, your hate mm-hmm. bear and a dork.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything in between. Or just one creature.
Yeah, just single creatures also, right? Getting like 2 creatures is optimal, but you know, this is a really good card.
Just to mention that in Modern, it brings back 2 Death Shadows.
Oh god. Or a Snappy and Death Shadow, and then Snappy snaps back.
That's like 4 mana, and you don't forget that you have 5 lands in your Death Shadow.
Make sure I was always dreaming big.
But yeah, that is definitely a possibility to do, and it's actually a really interesting card in multiple formats.
Is anything interesting in mono besides Fertile being reprinted?
Well, from the rest of the cards, there's that we got a fixed version of Veil of Summer in blue.
Which one?
Keep Safe is 1 in a blue, instant. Counter target spell that targets a permanent you control. Draw a card.
No, it's not. It's not Veil of Summer. It's way neutered.
Yeah, because it counters a spell and, you know, Abrupt Decay can't be countered.
Actually, mostly because this is in blue and you're expecting a counter spell in blue.
This is in blue and it's 2 mana.
Yep. Wanna talk multicolored? Because there's not that much multicolored.
Yeah, I mean, we did... Fertilid reprint.
I did mention that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, on to the multicolors then.
So, General Kudra of Dranit. Basically, the point of the set is humans versus kaijus, right?
Yes.
And General Kudra is the person leading that conflict. So, for 1 and a white and a black, it's a 3/3 legendary human soldier. Other humans you control get +1/+1. Whenever him or another human enters the battlefield under your control, exile target card from an opponent's graveyard. And 2 generic and sacrifice 2 humans, destroy target creature with power 4 or greater.
Okay.
He does 3 completely different things.
Yeah. Like, all of the things he does, are so completely wildly different.
And number 1 and number 3 actually kinda make sense, because he's the general. And he's killing the monsters. But some people are gonna, you know, get sacrificed doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2 is what the hell?
He exiles creatures from graveyards. Because... Why?
Because fuck Karador, I guess?
I guess. But anyhow, him as a commander, I don't really see him. Because he's super, super limited to what he can actually destroy.
Hey man, a human tribal.
But he does give humans plus one, plus one.
And he kills big stuff. I mean, not him. People he's willing to sacrifice.
Yeah. Well, some people have to sacrifice to ensure other people's safety.
Technically, he can sacrifice himself.
Yes. He actually can.
What's next?
Next up we have Fiend Artisan. He has two hybrid green-black. So it's a green-black and a green-black. For a 1-1 creature nightmare, Fiend Artisan gets plus one for each creature card in your graveyard. For X and a hybrid green-black, tap, sacrifice another creature, search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast sorcery.
Oof,
really, that's... Yeah, that's the most accurate thing we could say about this guy. It's like, whew.
He does a lot.
I mean, he tutors, so he can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, that's basically all you can say about him. He tutors for stuff. What stuff? Well, you put things in your deck, you can tell me.
Anything. I mean, for 3 mana, it tutors your hate cards.
Yes, he's really strong. Just that's all I can say.
It's a really strong. I expect this to see in all forms of Commander.
Mm-hmm. The guy right next to that card is everybody's. This is my original character plus one copy in D&D. So Chavil, Bane of Monsters for blue, for black and a green. It's a 1/3 legendary creature, human rogue. It has that touch. At the beginning of your upkeep, if your opponents control no permanents with bounty counters on them, put a bounty counter on target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls. Whenever a permanent an opponent controls with a bounty counter on it dies, you gain 3 life and draw a card. So what is that stupid weapon he's holding?
Super... It's part of the lower jaw. Of all monsters.
It's really a bad weapon.
I know.
Looks cool, but damn, it's dumb.
But hey, he puts bounty counters on things, and, you know, Mathas does that too.
And that one card from Mercurian Masks.
Whatever, dude.
Literally, it's called the Bounty Hunter. And it puts bounty counters on creatures. So there.
So I guess bounty counters matters is... the next year's Commander theme. Or this year's Commander Legends.
I know you said it facetiously, but you know that's gonna happen, right?
I know it's gonna happen.
Let's talk about something happier, like Gojira, the King of Monsters.
Which is actually Zilortha Strength Incarnate. So Zilortha, it's a 3 green red for a 7/3 legendary creature dinosaur with trample. Lethal damage dealt to creatures you control is determined by their power rather than their toughness.
It's dick fighting.
So it's but this is only when looking at lethal damage. It's not like they deal damage with their power instead with their toughness. It's just that this 7/3 is actually a 7/7.
Unless it gets lightning bolted, then it's super 7/3.
No.
Oh no! It's oh still no! It's a 7/7. Oh yeah. Oh good.
But if you -3/-3 it, then it's a super 7/3. Yeah.
So it's really afraid of Myers' grasp, but not afraid of lightning bolts.
Yep.
That's weird. This is a weird card, but all those 10-1 elemental tokens you can create are now super scary.
Yeah. Suddenly they don't die to 1-1 first strikers. Like, this could actually be a legit commander. And you just fill your deck with all those...
Lightning Elementals and stuff.
X1 creatures. Like, the bigger the better. There's also that 8-0 guy that you just have to find a way to give it one toughness. And then, you know, it becomes an 8-8.
You just play Gaeas Anthem and that's it?
Yeah, then it's a 9-9. Easy.
Aha! So what's next? Obosh, the Brewer.
Mm-hmm.
For 3 and a black-red hybrid. It's another, it's a Helium Horror, first of all. And it's another two companions. Each Nomad card in your starting deck must have an odd converted mana cost. Whenever a source you control with an odd converted mana cost deals any damage, double that damage instead. It's a 3-5.
I am kind of disappointed that this is Rakdos combination because you can't put it with Yennet. But I'm pretty sure that they had that in mind.
Possibly.
I'm pretty sure they did because those decks are really old and these cards were created there, well, they probably had that Yennet in mind. But anyways, well, I'm actually, this guy's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. First of all, this deck doesn't get shut down by Void Winnower.
So, plus points?
What else?
I mean, it doubles damage, so the possibilities are, well, are limitless. Especially since it doesn't increase the damage, it doubles it, so it's a good commander. It's a good companion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good companion for... I mean, let's just say that... Oh yeah, Kravak the Merciless is a 7 mana creature, right?
Kravak the Merciless is 7 mana, yes.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's your commander, and this is its companion.
And you definitely play Void Winnower in this deck. Especially if your friend is playing Gomori the Collector.
Yeah.
So, I think we need to speak of them in that order. What does Umori do?
Let me just... Umori the Collector is 2 and 2 hybrid green-black for a 4-5 legendary creature ooze. Companion, each non-land card in your starting deck... It's the wrong one. It's the Giruda the Doom of the of Depths.
Sorry.
Giruda the Doom of Depths is a 4-4 and 2 hybrid blue-black. For a 6-6 legendary creature, Demon Kraken.
Okay, stop there. It's a Demon Kraken. What the fuck?
So it's basically Cthulhu.
Are they just pulling thoughts about from my 14-year-old metalhead's imagination while making creature types? I don't know. So, anywho?
Companion, your starting deck contains only cards with even converted mana costs. When Giruda enters the battlefield, each player puts the top 4 cards of their library into their graveyard. Put a creature card with an even converted mana cost from among those cards onto the battlefield under your control. So, yeah. These two are like kind of like opposites, even though they share a color.
What I like is that Giruda is placed in heavens, in the Obosh is placed in heavens in the art, and Giruda is in the sea. Legitimately, you know. Night and day, earth and sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty. Only, you know, the mana costs don't mirror, so...
Oh, well.
But whatever. Anyway,
sounds cool.
So, Obosh is really cool, really good as a commander, really good as a companion, while Giruda, it's in blue and black, but it doesn't work well with Yennet.
It doesn't, but it is in the same archetype that Vrexel the Risen Deep is.
Mm-hmm.
Still shit.
Yep. So it's a good companion to Rexiel, definitely. And Rexiel is 6 mana.
Mm-hmm. And you play Geruda once and then keep on bouncing her.
Yeah. Sounds completely legit. And then you steal everything.
I was kind of hoping... the reason why I said Umori, by the way, against Obosh, because the arts look like they're completely polar difference. Because one is sharp edges and lights, other is a bit more dimmer and round edges.
Mm-hmm. The other is a blob.
But that's a, yeah. Now that you mentioned that, I guess Umori the Collector for 2 black-green, a 4-5, Legendary Ooze. Companion, each Nolan card in your starting deck shares a creature type.
Card type, sorry.
As Umori the Collector enters the battlefield, choose the card type. Spells you cast of the chosen type cost 1 less to cast. Huh. This is weird.
It is.
It's the ultimate tribal deck.
Ultra tribal, yeah. I mean, if you say artifact, you can do a lot of things with it.
Of course, he needs to be in the play to, you know, do that.
I know, but you play Umori and your artifacts cost 1 less and, well, suddenly you combo off. I'm just saying.
You could be playing something like, you know, a certain captain, a Joyra, but, you know. Umori is cool, albeit weird.
I was going to say, I really don't know what to say, actually. So, I'm just gonna stop right there.
And carry on to some other cards?
The payoff isn't really good enough.
Nope.
For me to, like, consider Cardor being only a permanent deck and then transforming it into a creature-only deck, it's not worth it.
Nah, you don't want to do that.
I mean, but it could be interesting. The color restrictions are there, definitely. But I feel like maybe you can fit it into, like, a Spellslinger kind of deck. Like, you play... that's really hard, but that's really interesting, you know? Put it into a... like, have a 5-color deck. You put a commander that's... Wait. That doesn't work. You can't actually build a Spellslinger type commander, because if you're playing this as your commander, you're playing green and black spells, and that's just garbage. And if you use it as your companion, well, you can't, because your commander is a creature. So you can't...
Doesn't work in a way that, you know, your starting deck is your 99, you have...
No. Your starting deck is your 99 and your commander.
Well, that's bullcrap.
Your deck has 100 cards. It's just that one of those cards is in your command zone. He's still part of your deck, so...
Well, that's dumb.
Well, there we go. Dream failed.
So, what's the next card you want to talk about?
Oh, just say what Keruga, the Macro Sage, actually does. So it's a 5-mana 5/4. Your deck contains non-only cards with converted mana cost 3 or greater, and land cards. When Keruga the Macro Sage enters the battlefield, draw a card for each other permanent you control with converted mana cost 3 or greater.
This one is perfectly balanced.
Yeah, because blue and green really needed more ways to get a payoff from playing, you know, big stuff.
I mean, you are kind of crippled by not playing things like dorks.
Yeah, like your first 3 turns are just pass.
Yep.
I mean, your first 2 turns are just pass. You literally can't play anything. You can play...
You can if you have an Elder Spirit Guide. Got him.
You can play stuff that you can play for free, like, I don't know, Force of Will, Force of Negation, Force of Vigor, things like that. You can still play
I'm seeing much forces in your future.
You can't play Pact of Negation in your deck, though. It's 0.
Oh. You know what's a cool card?
The one right next to it?
One right and left of it, actually. Quartz Forest Crusher for 2 red, red, green. It's a dinosaur beast, trample. And whenever one of one or more creatures you control with trample deal combat damage to a player, create an XX green dinosaur beast token with trample, where X is the damage dealt to that player by those creatures. It's a 6/6.
Mm-hmm.
So you put it in your stupid dinosaur deck and just go smash.
Or you put it in your trample tribal deck.
Stormbro, Crossing Hero.
I was trying to think of remember his name. But yeah, you put it in Stormbro, and suddenly you're putting on the megahertz.
Want to talk about the card you were actually referring to before?
Oh, yeah. So, Death's Oasis is 3 mana. That's... what's the...
Abzan.
Abzan, yes. So, for Abzan mana, enchantment, whenever a non-token creature you control dies, put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard. Then return a creature with card with lesser converted mana cost than the creature that died from your graveyard to your hand. 1. Sacrifice Death's Oasis. You gain life equal to the greatest converted mana cost among creatures you control. So this second effect is completely whatever. You basically never use it. But the first half... Now that's an effect.
Mm-hmm. Recursions.
That's a really interesting and good effect. This is, like, man, it's just really good. For, like, I'm looking at this for, like, Reaper King.
Mm-hmm. It,
with one of the primary colors being white and black in the deck, and green being, like, the least represented color, but this is splash-worthy. Because combine this with Teshar, and then you have, like, all the recursion you could ever want.
Oof.
Like, this is such good recursion, because, you know, adding them to your hand, that's kind of like, it's still good. I mean, the perfect recursion would put them into your onto the battlefield, but this is 3 mana. You know. This is 3 mana, and remember, wait, did the Scrapyard Trawler, did he put into play or into your hand?
I think it was in play.
Yeah, but the thing is, Scrapyard Trawler is a bit busted.
Mm-hmm.
But Death Oasis is still pretty good.
It's really, really good. It's really grindy.
Mm-hmm. I could see it as a really cool tool. For recursion in more competitive games, and mm-hmm. is a definitely really good recursion mechanic for any type of casual deck.
Yep. Want to talk about a card that's not really good in Commander?
Go ahead.
Lutri, the Spell Chaser. So, this is a card that put Memory Jar to shame. How fast it got banned. 1 and a blue-red, and you see the problem right here. It's blue-red. It's a 3/2 elemental otter legendary creature. Companion, each non-land card is playable in Commander. AKA, each non-land card in your starting deck has a different name. It has flash, so not a problem. When it enters the battlefield, if you cast it, copy target instant or sorcery spell with you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Hey, we finally banned Flash.
Flash is banned, boys.
We did.
So, what exactly happened?
It goes in any deck that plays blue, red, and whatever other color. Because there is no price being paid for including it in the deck.
So, yeah, it was basically prematurely banned in Commander. At first, I thought it was just banned as companion, but no, it's just banned.
I would honestly just ban it as a companion, but you know.
Yeah, but the, it's like they have this, like, they used to have banned as commander, but that was confusing, and...
It wasn't, shut up.
I know, but, like, then you have this, and suddenly you can't play it as your commander. I mean, you can because rule zero, no. No. Let's stop with the rule zero thing. You can't play it as your commander, which is a shame, because it's actually not that good. Because you need to cast Lutri to get the effect, so no bounce shenanigans. But as a pure value card that's always in your hand that can't be interacted with by your opponent, without any restriction as your companion, yeah, that's a bit too good.
A bunch of people actually got upset because this card got banned, but they wanted to actually ease the banning for those people. Just switch the art for Lutri with Umori. If you do that, suddenly a bunch of people are like, oh, well, you know what, I can see it. Bunch of people just wanted to have a legendary otter in their, you know, sideboard / command zones.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame them because it looks adorable as hell.
Yeah.
Because look at it. It's having fun. basically it's an otter and you can't not like otters.
I mean, companion is still a pretty new thing for commander and, you know, it's basically, you basically can have three commanders now.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see that if companion might actually get the X at some point because...
Most of the companions so far are just, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, but it's just a matter of time if there is gonna be a companion that's, like, horribly broken or something. Because there are 10... there are going to be 10 companions, and we saw, what, 5? 4? 4. 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5.
Yep.
So there's still time to make, like, an absolute broken... companion.
We shall see. What's next we should talk about? Something perhaps legal in Commander.
I mean, Skull Prophet is an interesting card.
What does it do?
It's a green and a green and a black. It's a 3/1. Creature human druid. On tap, it adds black or green. Or on tap, it puts the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard.
It's interesting.
It's a dork that has other uses. I mean, I would argue, though, it's probably worth playing this over, like, a Llanowar Elf in Karadog.
Nope.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you ain't gonna argue me on this. I'm gonna play Skull Prophet instead of a Llanowar Elf.
I would play it alongside of the Skull Prophet. Level alongside.
Yeah, run both. Well.
Yes, see, that I can actually agree upon. But you saying I should play this instead of Lanarelf? No, you shouldn't.
Okay, instead of Boreal Druid.
Okay, that's much better.
Yeah, let's see. We can agree to things.
Like, it's sketchy, but at least this produces color. Okay. This is gonna be a quick one. Dire Tactics. For white and a black, it's an instant exile target creature. If you don't control a human, you lose life equal to that creature's toughness.
Honestly, this is a good removal spell in both cases.
Yeah, even if you don't have. I would gladly, like, lose 5-6 life and remove a big, huge, stupid thing.
Yeah, if you don't lose life, then even better. I mean, Alesha is a human, right?
So many things are random with humans. The Magister from like half an hour ago is also human, so you know.
It won't be a problem.
What's next to talk about? Is there anything in...
I would say, just as a cute card, a Proud Wild Bonder for 2 and a red-green. It's a 4/3 creature human warrior. With trample, Creatures you control with trample have, you may have this creature assign its combat damage as though it weren't blocked. So, your trample guys become thorn elementals.
Yes, they fight with the dicks, not with the butts. That's good.
Remember Stonebro? Stonebro getting a lot of love recently.
Remember that quartz attacker guy that just, okay, we'll make 7/7s. 7/7 dinosaurs, why not?
Yep.
I think next thing to talk about is the General's Enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, white and a black. 2/3, human soldier. Legendary humans you control have indestructible. It has some other ability, but doesn't matter that much. 2 and a white and a black. If it's a target card from a graveyard, if it was a creature, create a 1/1 white human soldier to creature token. But this can protect your generals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Natural play in militia.
You probably won't. I don't think it's worth a slot.
I have like 3 legendary humans. First of all, it says legendary creatures. I was like, oh, hell, oh, no, no, no.
Yeah, it's the bodyguard for a general or Kudro.
Yeah.
And then he sacrifices him for the greater good, of course.
The greater good. Is there anything else we need to mention from this
set? Well, we did receive the next set, cycle of cards that will be put into Commander decks instead of Signets.
Oh, yeah. Come on, read it and make it sad.
So, it's a cycle of crystals that all tap for 1 of 3 mana. They cost 3 mana. So let's say Savai Crystal is a 3 mana rock that taps for red, white, or black, and has cycling for 2. So they all have cycling 2, and they can be a mana rock. So I would say they're not the worst, but I'd still rather run a Signet.
Yeah. But if it's between this and Clue Stones. But again, if you in the situation where somebody's forcing you to play this or Clue Stones, you have bigger problems in your life.
Yeah.
So, that's it?
That's it concerning the mainland spoilers. The mainline set spoilers. For the time being, yeah.
But in a couple of days, we're going to be recording the Commander episode, Commander 20 episode, so...
Yeah, a lot more Commander goodies there. But what do you think of the set so far?
I have so many conflicting feelings about it. Because there is actually some single cards that are pitchingly good. And some that just make me like, ugh.
I'm somewhere like that. I love the set's art direction. Mm-hmm. I love all the alternate arts. I really like all of them, and I wish I could get all of them. I like the amount of legendary creatures and big stupid dinosaurs and monsters around.
Yep.
But I dislike the mechanics.
Mostly the mutate, right?
Mostly mutate, yeah. I mean, Maro did really try to hype up mutate, but anyone can see that mutate is, like, just really bad. I don't see it. I don't see it anywhere, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes really funny when you have these five... monsters on the field, and you keep mutating them onto each other. Like, you start with the Snapdex, and then you mutate Brokos onto it, then the Nethroid and Yadrog, then Iluna. It's like, it gets really wild. like a 5-color mutate deck that would rely on you getting these 5 legendaries and then just constantly mutate them one on top of another.
See, like, that's the time when you come to your commander and be like, okay, dude, today we're playing without any removal spells, okay? Okay? Please?
So, like, you start with Illuna, and then you then you mutate Hyadrok on Illuna, then you get you get your free wish, and you reanimate the Teferi, because you need that Teferi to protect your stuff from removal. Then you add a Brokos, and then you reanimate the Teferi again, because somebody killed him.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. In the end, you get a 6-6 with Double Strike, Trample, Death Touch, Lifelink, Flying, First Strike, and Trample. If you mutate all the big legendary stuff on top of each other.
For the small price of, what's that? 4, 7, 8, 9, 10, 14, 17, 22, 24, for a small price of 27 mana.
I mean, a small price to play for pay for greatness.
How much did it cost? Everything.
Except, I think that Brokos should be like the first to play, because he doesn't actually do anything. And you know what? That's my biggest issue with all these mutate cards, is that they don't actually do anything by themselves.
I mean, Snapdex is Double Strike.
It would be really cool that their triggered abilities were when they enter the battlefield or mutate. I understand that as they are right now, that would make most of these guys super broken.
But,
I still think that they could have had less minor, a bit toned down abilities, and to make them enter the battlefield, or something. Like, just mutate triggers is... I don't see them. I don't like them. If they were like, when it mutates or whenever it attacks. Whenever it attacks is also completely okay. I don't know. I just think that I dislike mutate. That's all I'm going to say.
But the rest of the set, without the mutate?
It does seem on...
There's pretty cool cards.
They're pretty cool cards, but it does seem on the weaker side. However...
That's not bad, necessarily.
I think that this is because they spoiled the flashier side of the set. So they spoil these 5 legendary creatures with epic evolve abilities. They spoiled some of the mythoses. They spoiled the planeswalkers, not all of them. They spoiled some random good cards. But I think that the more competitive cards, the more aggressively costed cards, are just arriving next mm-hmm. week.
Uncommons and commons.
No, and rares out, and some other rares, some mythics. I think that we're gonna see something like super scary and in the following days.
Well, I think that's it, right?
And what are your feelings about Companion?
If the author wasn't there, I'd be like, okay, this is completely fine. But didn't they think that far ahead?
I think that their original idea was that companions just aren't legal in Commander, because when you look at the rules, they start in your sideboard, yep. And you don't have a sideboard in Commander, so they should not be legal.
But okay, Lutri aside, the ones we have right now, perfectly fine. I have actually no problems with them being in Commander.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cool idea, but I still prefer the idea of using them in your constructed formats, other constructed formats like Modern, Pioneer, and Standard.
I wouldn't have problems if they just told us you can't have it in the, you know, as a companion, play to the 99. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with, like, you can't have companions in Commander. I was like, sure, okay, they'll be my commander then. Because there might be situations where, you know, having a third commander basically makes something really stupid. I'm just disappointed that all these, for now, I can't use them in my Tron, in any version of Tron. Like, if I wanna go with Karuga Tron, I'm just gonna die. It's a death sentence, because you can't afford not playing cards that cost less than 3.
Don't do that.
Like, there's Obosh, but Obosh for mono-red Tron? Because, you know, you have your map. You have your spell bombs. You have your Karn. Well, you actually have only one Karn. Feels bad, man. The best Karn, but... you also have your Banefire. You know, you got cards for Mono Red Obosh Tron. I'm just hoping that all companion cards show some more potential. Because I really like the idea of them in a regular constructed formats.
Well, we'll see how the whole thing pans out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that has been this for this week.
Yeah.
So again, you will get the double featured episode as soon as I edit this, and like as soon as Nisha sends this.
It's funny because you're saying that you'll be getting double feature episodes, and this will be the second episode of the double feature.
Yep.
So enjoy. You like the last episode?
Hopefully. But yeah, this has been episode 113 of the Old Dragon Dollar podcast. This was your host Igor, and as always with me was my co-host Nixia. Say bye, Nixia.
Bye.
And as always, the Emperor protects.
But he couldn't protect Lutri from the bans.
Womp womp.